Please, if I can have Matthew chapter 26, we'll actually begin reading in verse 26. And as they were eating, and by the way, they weren't having snacks at McDonald's. They were having the Passover meal. Jesus took bread from the Passover meal and blessed it and broke it and gave it to his disciples and said, "Take, eat, this is my body." And he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, "Drink ye all of it," or a better way of modern English saying, "All of you drink from it." It's "drink ye all of it" is really odd. He says, "For this is the is my blood of the New Testament," or the New Covenant, "which is shed for many for the remission of sins," or the forgiveness of sins. And then there's this, it's both sad and great hope at the same time. "But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." My guess is, folks, when Jesus said that, do you think anybody really understood what that was going to mean? They're thinking maybe he's going to take a little vacation or he's going to, no one had any idea that it was going to be 2,000 years. By the way, we're still, so that verse is both sad and gives us hope at the same time. Then it says, "And when they had sung a hymn, they went out into the Mount of Olives." So there's several things that you know. Look at me in the eyes and we'll pray. Do you know what you know from this verse? Jesus and his disciples, look at me in the eyes, they sang. Do you know what "they" means? And they sang a hymn. Now, I won't spend any time demonstrating what a hymn is, but other than to say this, the three words in the Greek New Testament, psalmos, hymnos, and hode, are all three words used for the book of Psalms. So undoubtedly, they sang one of the Psalms. We probably know which one. But tonight, we're just going to look at gathered, corporate, public worship. All three of those words mean exactly the same thing. So we're not discussing, please look at me, we're not discussing whether you can sing a romantic song. Because I've heard Christians mix and blur and blend everything together in a blender. There's lots of music that you can enjoy that I might not enjoy, but may I say this, we don't bring it to church because Christian, public, gathered, corporate worship is distinct. So if you want to go and sing the national anthem, that's fine. Maybe you can sing it in church, but understand that's not really a Christian hymn. You wouldn't sing it in Russia. You wouldn't sing it in Poland. So you understand there's a difference. We're talking about something that's very limited tonight. Music has been a problem in America for a long time. I thought about having Christy play a song, but it's just too nasty. But we'll talk about, this has been going on. By the way, I have personal experience with this starting in 1975. In the United States boot camp. So this has been going on a long time. Let's pray and we'll get started. Father, thank you for this time. May this be a profitable night. Help me to be able to be a help. I understand this is teaching, it's thinking, it's ideas, it's concepts. But yet we say we are a church, but a church has to practice what it supposedly believes, especially in this culture. When churches have gone off the rail and do whatever's right in their own eyes. Help us tonight to understand at least some biblical principles, we ask in Christ's name. Amen. You may be seated. I am going to read the beginning stuff as the introduction. From the 1600s until the late 1980s, most Bible-believing Baptist churches got gathered corporate public worship. Shockingly, your children, when they grow up and leave this area, will immediately run into a mess when it comes to music. By the way, is that correct? Now, in the 70s and 80s, when I was a young man, if I was on vacation or traveling from place to place, I could stop in any Bible-believing Baptist church, Bible churches, churches that are similar to us, and they pretty much were all the same. Somewhere in the mid to late 80s, things began to change. Now, I'm going to give you some background, and by the way, I don't mean this to be offensive, but if you have ears to hear, it's going to be offensive because there's people in this room that have been involved in this. So I don't think bad music showed up one afternoon. As we'll see by hymns we have in our hymnal, bad music didn't show up yesterday. Oh no, it's been gradually creeping our direction for a long time. I will have a question for everybody that I don't have an answer to during this introduction. Starting in somewhere after the Civil War, basically, the 1860s to the 1930s, there was a great transition from hymns to gospel songs. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm talking about from Wesley and Watts to Fanny Crosby and Frances who? Havergal. And if you don't know what that means, oh, by the way, you would know what that means, because if you drop into a typical Baptist church that thinks it's conservative, what you will find is they rarely ever, ever, ever sing a song like, "O Sacred Head," or "Be Still My Soul." They sing songs from the 1870s, 80s, 90s, and forward, peppy, peppy, peppy. And the best way to describe it, when you read a Watts song, look up here, when you read a Watts song is us singing about God. Starting in the late 1860s and forward, it became, and I have this in your notes, we moved from songs about God to songs, let me make sure I state it exactly as I have it so Frenchie doesn't come unglued. It went from songs about Him or about God to songs about how I feel about Him. Do you understand that? So no longer were we singing "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God." We started talking about how I feel about God. Is there a big difference in that? Now, please take a breath. I see in your notes, this was not disastrous since most churches maintain a mixture of the two. The great majority of fundamental Baptist churches had hymns and gospel songs, and they kind of mixed the two of them. There's a place for the gospel songs, personal testimony. There's a great place for hymnology. They mix them, so at the end of the day, probably most of the time it was okay, unless you had a pastor, like I said under, who said, we had three songs per service, first and last stanzas, and every song has to be upbeat and happy. Well, that eliminates two-thirds of the great songs in history. Because many songs, you read some of them tonight, they're more reflective. By the way, we had a great, interesting combination of songs tonight. We're going to talk about some of those. I mean, the song on prayer that Mike mentioned, is that a happy song? It's a reflective song. But it's not upbeat. By the way, never sang it. We only sang about 30 songs I did for 5 years. The best thing that I ever did when I got away from there was be introduced to hymnology. 30 songs. Now, I want to ask you a question. Please look up here. For you old-timers, I don't want you to answer, because I already know the answer. Do you realize what used to happen here when you only sang three songs, first and last? Do you remember those days? My guess is you don't. You have rewritten the past. All right, next in your notes. From the 1870s through the 1930s, we started also having gospel singing and music from the revivals and the revivalist. Pastor Warren is making no comment on the men. I don't want this to be personal. You say, who are you talking about? I'm talking about Moody, Torrey, Sunday, Bob Jones Sr., all of those men. Those men, some more, some less, brought music. By the way, they didn't bring music into the church. They brought it into these big revival meetings. That, as I say in your notes, that was sentimental, sensational, and frankly, some of it was, what's that sassy mean? Have you ever heard this guy and this guy play a trombone duet? Yes or no? They take a trombone and use it properly as a musical instrument. I don't know if you guys can, but if you just put a tinge of jazz in that, what do you have? You have sassy. And what started creeping into art, by the way, I'm not talking about somebody else's churches. I'm talking about these kind of churches. The sassy jazz age starts sliding into the church while we're thinking we're conservative. By the way, folks, music doesn't drop out of the sky. And it came specifically because many of these big conferences, who led the singing, Tim? A guy on a slide trombone. And he was sliding all over the place. I would not have anybody play a trombone like that here. You say, why? I'm not a big fan of jazz, but if you're going to have jazz, you keep it at home. We don't do it at church. All right. Next in your notes. I told you some of this you won't like, and some of you won't even understand what I'm talking about, but that's okay. Next in your notes. I say, thankfully, most of these songs were lost to time. There were some of the most sentimental, sappy songs that I have ever heard in my adult life came out of these revivals. Nonsense songs. Again, in the churches, you still had a mixture. You were primarily in the churches singing hymns and gospel songs. Some of that started to creep in. And where does it creep in, folks? How did it creep in the church? Somebody raise your hand and tell me. How did it creep in? Amy. Youth groups and special music. Because there is something inherent in people that we like entertainment. And if the guy can entertain you and you can get woo stuff, everybody's happy. So all of us, by the way, this is going on 100 plus years ago. This didn't start in the 1970s with those blasted bad rock and rollers. We continue. I say in your notes, at least up through the 1930s, most of these songs were not included in public worship of local church. The local church had one style of music, and the revival services had another style, and that was the norm. Now, we could talk a lot about this, but I don't have time to get into details, unfortunately. Next, the 1940s through the 1970s, starting right during World War II with Youth for Christ, and then kind of going with that and as part of that and around that was a group, was music styles called Singspiration. I will just tell you this, if you've never seen Singspiration, God bless you. My wife used to have every single one of the Singspiration little booklets, correct? What did you do with them? What did you do with them? You used to. What did you do with them? You don't remember? You threw them away. Don't you remember that? She still... My wife is still in there, by the way. Amy has new copies. By the way, you'd never sing any of these in church. Look at me. They sound like Lawrence Welk. When you sing them, you're like, yuck. But here, look at me. But Christians out there in the pew sleeping, they thought this was great because they watched the Lawrence Welk kind of music, big bandish kind of music, and they came to church and did big bandish kind of music, and hey, this is good. Oh, my. We've been doing this. By the way, folks, the nonsense that the hippies caused all the change, that is ridiculous. We continue. This music was schmaltzy. Now, that is a what kind of a word, Fawn? That's a Yiddish word. Anytime you have that S-C-H-M, shm, you know, anytime you think you're spitting on somebody, it's a Yiddish word. You say, what does schmaltzy mean? Extremely sentimental. It's often, and this is Pastor Warren, big bandish. You know what I mean? Look at me, folks. All you got to do is think of Benny Goodman, right out of the 40s, the big bands, and they start doing this in church. Very schmaltzy. Nobody asks any questions because most Christians are asleep. As long as they're happy, that's all that's important. We continue. Often it was frivolous music, and it was often very poor music. And here is the question that I don't have an answer to. By the time you get from the 1940s to the 1970s, look up here, and you can write this down. All music, look at me, all music had to be happy. So I have a question for you that are older than me. When did it happen that we had to only have happy music? And why? Do you realize in most churches, music... I mean, I was told in a class on music in an evangelistic church, no music in what? The minor key. Because the minor key is like reflective and you have to think. And I was told never sing a song in the minor key. So you guys think I'm looking at you. Folks, this has been promoted in our circles, not other circles. I probably still have the stupid book in my office. No music in the minor key. We have to be happy. By the way, now we have Joel Osteen. He had surgery. And you look at the guy and you're like, can you turn that off or dial that down? You know, it's like, hi, your mother just died. We just found out that Monica has cancer. Oh, by the way, the kind of music that promotes doesn't do very well when people have problems. Because the Psalms have 67 Psalms that are lament Psalms that aren't happy, that make you think, well, we'll move on. These are the background. The late 1940s through the 1970s. Going back up to the Youth for Christ. By the way, I'm not making comments of whether it was all bad. I'm just saying this is where it came from. And most of this, notice the emphasis on Youth for Christ, and Amy is correct. Everything came from youth. I'll answer this and I'll come back to that. Singspiration in the Billy Graham. Schmaltzy, often big bandish, frivolous music, often very poor, always happy. And then there was the turn to pragmatism. And pragmatism means, Rhonda, whatever works, whatever people like. And that really started, folks, in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. The difference was, look up here, the difference was in the 70s, we now had people like me that grew up on, well, I'll get to it, I grew up on great classic music. We'll talk about what it is in a little later. And then people Ron's age didn't like that kind of music. But they didn't have a problem. I'm not saying Ron. I don't know about Ron. But Ron, per se, didn't have a problem with big band stuff because he'd grown up on that. Hello? Actually, both of them were just borrowed directly from the world, from dance halls and those sorts of things. By the way, folks, I'm not a musician, but I'm not stupid. We continue. We finally get to the late 1940s to the 1970s, and this is where it really starts getting serious, and it progressively gets more serious, and this is where Amy is correct, where you have music of and by and for the youth that was different. So all of a sudden, what is happening? You have what we do on Sunday morning. Look up here, folks. Dave, you and your lovely wife, I better not say that because she's mean and other things too, but you and your wife, you have two handsome sons. Do you realize in most churches, if you come to the church, your two sons go someplace, you never see them? Now, you say, why do you not do that here? So somebody answer, why don't we do that here? Jim? I want your handsome sons and all the other young people to be engaged in adult worship. Now, at appropriate times, look at me, at appropriate times, our young people go to a Sunday school class to be taught at their age, and at an appropriate time, right before I get up to preach, Mr. Hall or Brian or someone else takes the young people, but by the way, they've already been through what? The entire adult worship. We don't have youth worship and adult worship. Do you think that's an accident? That is absolutely intentional. Now, I want the young people to have someone that takes the Bible down to their level, especially 2 and 3 year old, 4 and 5. Are you kidding me? But on the other hand, I want everybody to be able to sing Amazing Grace. I want everybody to be able to sing Be Still My Soul. I don't want to have one kind of music for the kids and one kind of music for the adults. So, because what happens? We know what's happened in this country. Well, it comes to the next level. So what happened, and it happened actually around 1980, but it didn't become known until probably 85, 86, 87, 88, 89, you know, that later 80s. In the late 1980s to the present, Bill Hybels was the guy that started it in the Chicagoland area, Rick Warren in California. Many people, plus, have followed it. And you say, what did they do? Underneath that, I say this. They simply brought the youth group to church. So they decided this. Folks, I've read Rick Warren's books. I've heard Rick Warren speak many times. Rick Warren is almost the same age as me. He grew up with the same kind of music I did, and he checked out his people, and he found out most of these people like rock music. So instead of messing around and saying, well, the kids can go down and the kids listen to this kind of music, but we sing Christian music, he said, why don't we just bring that to church? Now, I'm going to confess something to you. When I first started hearing this stuff in the mid-1970s, I thought no Christian would ever want to listen to that garbage. And I say to you, was I wrong? People would much prefer to be entertained than to sing. I never knew that. I thought we came to church, look at me, and I can't sing. I'm better than Louis. But that's not saying a whole lot. By the way, Louis does have musical ability. He can play a piano. By the way, but I like to hear us sing. Now, I prefer not to be close to Mike when he sings. There's another guy sitting by my daughter back there. I think he's married here. He didn't sing much better. Not that daughter, the nice daughter over here. I prefer to sit by Mike because Mike has a beautiful voice. I can sit by Dada, but I can't go high, so I prefer to sit by Tim because Tim has that. And once in a while, I can hit one of those notes if it's high enough. So now we use the music you already like and listen to it in church. Now, folks, please look at me. I want you to do something for me. I want you this next week to think about these and read through this and think about this and ask yourself a question. Do you realize what happens to churches? Little gradual changes. Now, I'm going to ask this question. How many of you know what year this church began? Amy? Yeah, 73, 74. We have a lady that was here in the early days right back there sitting by Steve. By the way, this church was started because of the Askews, the Baines. Mary Sechrist was a member of Emmanuel Baptist Church in Waukegan. And guess why they started a Bible-believing church? Because, not because of the music in church, because of the music in the youth group. Because they were doing rock and roll in the youth group. And this is a long time ago, 43 years ago, they realized those godly people, and I love the Askews as much as I love anybody here, I can tell you that. They realize if you start filtering that garbage into the young people, it's going to come right to church. Now, here's what you all don't know. I know people that were in that church with the Askews and with the Baines and with Mary Sechrist. I met them at Mr. Heiner and Mrs. Heiner's funeral. They're people now 70s to 80 years old. Now, are you listening to me? Yes or no? Where's Emmanuel Baptist at? It's out now on the highway. It's called Emmanuel Church. They don't know who they are or what they believe now. The pastor sits in a chair and apologizes for 15 minutes. That's his sermon. Well, you're in a journey. I'm in a journey. And yes, I have listened to him. It was all I could to go through the apologies. But here's the point. I didn't ask any questions about Emmanuel Church. Those old people, this is what they said. They said, we go to church. We sit down, we turn our hearing aids off until the music's over. That was the group that compromised in 1974, and they stayed. The other folks said, we want a church that has godly Christian music. Hello? Our church started over music. All right. Well, let's begin with the principles. If I have not upset you by now, I will by the first, second, and third point. In your notes, here are some thoughts about gathered corporate public worship. Number one, this is not about personal preference. I could care less what you like. I could care less what I like. This isn't about liking anything. So we'll never have the conversation, what do you, I, we, or they like? Or what he or she likes? We're going to talk about, as it says in Ephesians 5, speaking to themselves in psalms. We're going to ask what those are. Hymns, what are those? Spiritual songs, what are those? Singing and making melody in your heart. And by the way, your is plural, not a singular, you know, I talk to myself. But from the heart, beginning in the heart, to the Lord. Years ago, this was probably, I only remember because Stacy came and Scott almost the same time they were leaving. I don't remember, his name was Scott also. I don't remember her name. Please don't say it because I don't want to know it. She came to my office. She was, you know, of course, he was there like a little typical. By the way, we don't have males like this in this church. He was a weenie. So he followed his wife in, you know. And she was doing all the talking, and she's all twitchy. And her statement was this: I just have to have my choruses. And I looked at her. I'm not a nice person. You know that. I didn't know they were yours. Did you write them? Do you play musical instruments? What was she saying? I just have to have my feelings. So, for all of you that are young and old, I'm looking back there at my brother from India. You're not going to have a clue what I'm talking about because you're from a foreign country. But yes, I did grow up on classic music. Classic rock. Look at me. I can still remember where I was the first time I heard Lynyrd Skynyrd, Free Bird. I know where I was. The first two albums I ever owned was Led Zeppelin, Stairway to Heaven, and The Who, Who's Next. And you say, I don't know who those people... That's called rock, folks. I mean, Jimi Hendrix, The Cream. I had so much of this stuff. REO Speedwagon, Marshall Tucker Band. You say, why did you quit rock music? Look me in the eyes. It wasn't because I didn't like it. I actually listened to it. I would say I listened to an album, but that wouldn't be true. I listened to an 8-track. And I had the audacity, and it was just audacity. By the way, if you're into music, you better listen to what I'm saying. No preacher ever got me to quit rock music. What got me out of that culture was listening, using my brain. So I listened to a great album called, and by the way, the last time I told a friend of mine named Kevin Bowder this, he went and listened to the whole album, and he looked at me and says, I now know why you don't listen to that. I actually listened to the words of Jethro Tull. Sitting on a park bench, watching little girls go by. You perverted pervert. Yet some of you listen to music just like that now because you're brain dead. You got to have music on all the time. By the way, so if we want to talk about preferences, I have lots of preferences. But we're not going to discuss your preferences or mine because, trust me, we're not bringing rock here of any variety. You say, why? We're actually gathered corporate public worship. I know this is shocking. Is about worship. It's not about what you like. Look at me. It's not about what you like. You're one of those people. I got to tell the story. You're one of those people that bought your wife a Christmas present. And you took it home to your wife, and what did you buy her? The bread maker. And you gave her the bread maker and asked her to make you some bread. Because you're so blockheaded when you say, I like this music. Do you understand what the problem is? The question you should be asking is what? Yes, is this what God likes? You're asking the wrong question. You are the pervert that comes up to somebody and gives them a gift and then expects the gift back. Worship is about God. It's not about me and how I feel. And because frankly, I'd rather hear Free Bird tonight than pretty much any of you singing. And some of you are like, who? What? Where? What's that? Our Simple Man? Our Tuesday's Gone? And you say, I don't know any of those songs. God bless you. I'd still rather hear them than you. But see, here's the problem. We're Christians and we're part of a church and we're here to worship God, not to do what we like. So this is not about personal preferences. Is that clear enough? Number two, the words are obviously essential. They're obviously essential and have first priority. So if we're looking at music, friend, look at me. If we're looking at music, what is the first thing we're going to look at? The content. But see, here's where Pastor Warren draws a line, and you're going to hate me. And I'm going to, now this is right up Ron and Frenchie's alley because they're the only two old enough to know this. Maybe Jim, but he was young. That's not true, but now look at me. Have you ever heard somebody? Well, let's go to these two together. The words are obviously essential and have first priority. Secondly, I did this to irritate my wife, English people. The music is not non-essential. Because people will say, oh, the music, it doesn't make any difference what kind of music. By the way, it doesn't make any difference what kind of music you play, just as long as the words are good. Look at me. Yes? No, I'm asking a question. Okay, well, wait till we say, we're going to have some fun tonight. It's not nice, but it's going to be fun. In your notes, the music is not non-essential and can never be neutral. Years ago, look up here, folks. Now, I think, but I could be wrong, this might have been when Pastor Rick Melvin was at Cedarville. I do not know. I met somebody that was in chapel at Cedarville, used to be a fundamentalist school, then it went stupid, and now it's more conservative than it's ever been at Southern Baptist. But at Cedarville, some idiot came and wanted to talk about music. And this is what he did. He walked up to the piano. Now, by the way, everybody here knows I know nothing about a piano. I don't know anything other than there's white keys and black keys. And this is what he did. He reached over and he hit a white key. And then he hit the black key. And then he asked this question. Which note is good? And which one is bad? And then, very piously, said this. See, music is neutral. What's the problem with that, Stacy? Two notes are not music. Yeah, it's like two letters. It means nothing. But that guy did that at Cedarville College as a big pious puke to prove to people, hey, we can rock it. We can do anything we want to do because music is neutral. So, are you guys ready? We're going to look at a very simple song. That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard, and I'm no musician. Music has definite purposes. Now, I know some of you need to go home, get one of those bottle cleaners, put it in your ear, and go like this, because you never want to see that again. Frenchie has it on tape. That's who we got it from. I want you to look in your notes. Now, friend, we don't know everything about the New Testament, and I'm going to have to hurry. We don't. But we do know this. In the New Testament, in Ephesians 5:19, it's very interesting because in the New Testament, there are three words that are used for songs. Please look up here first. Look at me. All three words, any educated person in this room already knows all three words. What's interesting is all three words also have corresponding verbs. Because the point being is not only the content, the noun's important, but how you do it's important. So look at the text. I'm not going to read Ephesians 5, and I put Matthew 26 because it has the verbal form for humnos. But look in your notes, I say this, each noun has a corresponding verb underneath. You have psalmos, that's the noun for psalm. You have salo, that's the verb for psalm. It meant to sing a psalm or to play an instrument for a psalm, that sort of a thing. You have, by the way, have you ever heard of the word psalmos, psalm? How about the next one? Humnos, hymn. Then you have the corresponding verb, humneo, which is used in Matthew 26:30. They had sung a hymn. That was the verbal form. They sang a hymn together. By the way, psalmos, if you look back at Ephesians 5:19, it says speaking to yourself in psalms. It's a little different form. It's a dative plural, but that's okay. And then you skip on down and it says singing and making melody is the word salo. It's a participle, but it's the form of salo. I mean, the noun and the verb are together, which is telling us it's not enough just to talk about the content. You also have the music and how it's performed. The third word, everybody look at me, you know this word too. Anybody that has an education. Now, if you don't have an education, we don't use it a lot. But humnos and psalmos, just by listening, you know the word. The other word, you know the word too. It's the word in Greek, it's ho, let's see, hode. In English, it's O-D-E. an ode, which we use all three of those words in our language. It also has a verbal form, ado, which is found back up in Ephesians 5:19, where you have speaking to yourselves in psalmois, hymnois, and spiritual songs. Hodais, pneumatikais. So you have it right there. And then you're singing. That is the word for the verbal form, ado. It's a participle again, in making melody. So you have five of the six words in Ephesians 19. You have the sixth word in Matthew 26, verse 30. Now we're going to progress. And Mrs. Warren, sooner or later, I will need you on the piano because we're going to sing a little bit of music while we do this. In your notes, there are three basic views of music today. Now, everyone look up here before you turn the page. I'm not going to turn myself around. It will drive me nuts. You'll have to look at your page. You basically have, two minority views. There's one minority view of, what about music? By the way, we hold one minority view. And then you have the large majority, and I would say the vast majority of the evangelical world holds to this view. And then on the far left, there is another smaller view of things. And I think I have it in your notes. I have arrows because I think everything tends to be moving from the right to the left. I think there's tremendous pressure on churches like us to start compromising and moving to the left. And part of the reason is, look at me, you'd rather be entertained than anything else. The you in your chair. Do you realize how much entertainment we imbibe? And some people cannot shut it off, ever. All right, next page, please. On the far right is the view that we hold in this church, that both words and music are essential. We think it's not just the words, it's also the music. That is, by the way, that is a minority view. You do recognize that. Yes or no? So if you go to Dallas, you go to Moody, you go to any of those Bible church schools or anything connected to that group, are they going to hold to that position? The answer is no. They're going to be in the middle, which is the words are essential. The music is non-essential or neutral. That's just where they're going to be. Now, can I ask you, do you at least recognize that, yes or no? I can remember coming back to Chicago in 1996 and turning on Moody, and I'm like, whoa! Because I remember Moody from the 70s that had Christian music, and now whatever they do, I mean, I just rather listen to secular, personally. Pretty much any secular. I mean, I don't need whatever that blended up nonsense is. You say, Pastor Warren. Because here, folks, if I listen to a secular song, I know what they're coming from, and look at me, and I'm listening. When I'm listening to Christian music, it's very easy just to get sucked down the rabbit hole. You're not listening. You're not evaluating. We continue. So, from the far right, we believe that both words and music are essential. The great majority believes the words are essential, but the music is non-essential or neutral. Now, I want to ask you a question. Is music neutral? So, you would not have a problem somebody hiring some woman 20 years old dressed like that come up to sing to your husband happy birthday. That wouldn't be a problem? Yes, it would be. Wait a minute, Fawn. They're just singing happy birthday. Well, it doesn't appear like they're singing happy birthday, do they? Okay, we move on. By the way, sometimes I catch some of your attention. Some of you can sleep through anything, but that's okay. We move on. On the far left, this group thinks that neither the words nor the music is essential. And there is a small, but I would say growing movement there. On the far right, this is where we are. We are at liberty to use music or style, I should say probably styles, that complement the words or the content. In our perspective, you use music or the style of the music that complements the words or the context. All right, Pastor Kowak, you're going to come up and you're going to lead us in a couple songs. So we'll begin. How about this? Let's begin with 587, please. Unless everybody stand, we'll sing a... Tim, just sing, let's see, in this song, let's sing just one stanza, please. Please. Standing. Now, let's ask questions because we're actually thinking. The content's okay? Does the music complement the content? You don't think so? I do. It's an upbeat. By the way, Lois, not my favorite song, but it does more or less, it's an upbeat song with an upbeat message. Positive, victorious. Now, let's look at another song, 296. One stanza. I'm not trying to trick you tonight, believe it or not. 296. You must remove whatever I was singing on this thing because I never want to hear my voice singing ever. That would be New Year's Eve for sure. Now, look at me. Finlandia. Well, that's great music. That's great music. Does the music match the words? All right, now let's ask a question. Can you swap that music for Victory in Jesus? You're doing something with music that's totally the opposite of the words. Look at me. All I'm asking for, and we'll say more, but what I'm basically asking for is something simple, which is music and the message works together. Is that fair? I have heard these kinds of songs with new music, and you're like, and they do it with a rock beat and rocked up, and you're like, what's wrong with you? Be Still My Soul doesn't need any help. All right, and let's look at another song. This is one of my favorites. It's tough. This ends, we'll look at 241. I'm going to confess that I never sang this song in a church until I came here, and I started changing the music because I grew up on Peppy Peppy, Happy Happy. You wouldn't want to do anything that's not Happy Happy. Go ahead, Tim.
Sacred head now wounded. Where
I'm sorry. Number three.
What language shall I borrow to thank thee, dearest friend, for this thy dying sorrow, thy pity without end? Oh, make me thine forever, and should I fail,
sing one last song. Is everybody getting the point? Let me say this, folks. You don't take victory in Jesus and put it with O Sacred Head. But you also sing O Sacred Head because it has a little bit, frankly, not trying to be mean, a little more substance in the center than most other songs have. And it focuses on whom? You or God? You see, there's the difference. Now, I'm not opposed to victory in Jesus. I don't know what you were thinking, Lois. I think a mixture of music like this is fine. Now, we do have, and I'm going to mention two other songs. I want to mention that we sang tonight. We sang Sweet Hour of Prayer. If we had enough time, we would talk about that. Perfect music for what you're doing. What's interesting, and not one of my favorite songs for a couple of reasons, but it's good on the whole, on Jordan Stormy Bank. But if you listen to the music is moving as if you're moving towards heaven. You wouldn't want to have an introverted minor key song singing about going to heaven. But if you're reflecting on what Jesus did for you and you're doing this, something's weird. Oh, we have one of those songs, don't we? We don't sing it, but half of it, but we have it. Turn your Bibles to page, or your Bibles, your hymn books, to page 237. Now, this is the worst of the worst, because they take one of the great hymn writers in history and then they put a ditty on the end. You know what a ditty is. Look at me, all you old timers. Happy music, happy music. Happiness didn't start in the 70s. Happiness started that we see in music in the 1870s. We got to be happy. Happy, happy, happy. We can never for one moment think about anything that doesn't make us happy. What's wrong with us? Pastor Koch, we'll sing, by the way, we're just going to sing the first, you know where to stop. Sing the first and the last. Do not sing the chorus, and then we'll come back and sing the chorus at the end and see if there might be some kind of a problem here. Okay? So if you get saved, you are happy all the day. Your mother just died. Happy, happy, happy. You may be seated. Thank you. You guys having fun? Let's look at the notes again. So from the far right, in a church like ours, we believe that we are at liberty to use music or styles of music that what? Complement the words and the content. And folks, If you're going to sing about, and alas, and did my Savior bleed, look at me, you don't sing about happiness. I mean, that should move you, but it shouldn't be like happy kind of moving. There might be a deep joy in what Jesus has done for you, but you're not like, woo-hoo-hoo, happy. Okay, in the middle, they believe, and this is the vast majority of the evangelical world, I am at liberty to use any music or style as long as the words are, as long as the words are what? They're good. Does it make any difference what style of music you use, just as long as the words are good? Now, I think on the first page I showed you something, and I'm going to do it again. Look up here. This is always moving. So once a church takes a left turn, most churches, now not all of them in one generation, some of them take a turn and they stop right here and they do pretty well for 10, 20 years. It's when the next guy comes in that they keep moving. But some churches just keep moving. Listen, we have them right here in this area. Zion Bible Church rock and rolled its way out of existence, trying to be cool. And that's not a maybe. I know the guy, and it was an embarrassment. This was a fundamental Bible church that was one of the good churches that the guy decided to go contemporary. And by the way, then the problem is, what if we decide to go contemporary tomorrow? None of us would be comfortable with rock and roll. So we would just go contemporary here, and that would offend a bunch of us in this room, and it wouldn't make any of those folks happy, and these kind of churches just commit suicide. So we're not planning on going anyplace. To the far left, they believe they're at liberty to use any music, period. To the far right, and I know I'm not going to explain this, and I don't have time to defend it. I said sacred content matches sacred styles. And I do believe there is definitely sacred content, and I think on the whole there are sacred styles of music. I have not commented. I don't think that's limited to America or to Europe. And I think, by the way, look at me, I think you know intuitively. I've been to Pastor Franco's church. My goodness, they have bass guitars. They have drums. It's so loud. It's way too loud for me. But the funny part is, once you get past the loudness, they do the exact same thing that we do here and the exact same songs. We continue. In the middle, sacred styles are good because people, they like them. Yeah, excuse me, secular styles are good because people like them. Yes, people love, you know, they love what they listen to. On the far left, it's much worse than that. Secular music is good, where in reality you can now go to churches where they play secular music. Now, I'm going to date myself. Some of you will not know what I'm talking about. This guy here will know what I'm talking about, and a handful of others. I went into boot camp in 1975 at Orlando, Florida. In Orlando, Florida, they had a chapel. They called it the Bible Believers Chapel. And in 1975, they had a contemporary chapel. Why, Gail? Because the churches were doing what with the youth? We'd already separated off. Did you ever wonder why we don't separate off? Wow, some of you know. When I was in boot camp, are you ready? They played a song, and they played it every single Sunday. And it was from, and this is really before our time, this is back in Rock's time, they in Mike Hall's time, they played Grand Funk Railroad song, I'm Your Captain. Everybody listen to me and return me to my ship. I'm your captain. I'm your captain, though I'm feeling mighty sick. And you say, what does this have to do? It says, if you return me to my home port, I will kiss you, Mother Earth. Take me back now. Take me back now to the port of my birth. I'm your captain. Yay, yay, yay. Oh, that's terrible. No, wait a minute. Was it last year or the year before? Now, this is way out of my wheelhouse. The gentleman died from drug overdose. What's his name? Prince. And there were churches in Minneapolis that played Purple Rain on Sunday morning. Christian music, isn't it? Now, just so you know, there are some, you know, now, if you're old enough, if you're too young, see some of this, but they do it all the time. Because the people in charge, look at me, folks, the people in charge of churches are my age. So they think they're being contemporary. Most of their contemporaries from the 70s or the 60s. I have heard churches that played right up your alley. The song by Kansas. What is it? Dust in the Wind. Now, they were good dopers and rockers, you know, and of course it must be something to do with Christianity. My favorite song of all, I was going to have Christy play it, but I thought it would offend some people. I have heard of churches that sing the song from a little rock group when I was a kid called Queen. And the rock in the song is, "We are the champions." Now, you do realize, no, Ron and Gail have no idea, "We are the champions" was a song that was a gay homosexual group. The guy that was a lead singer died of AIDS, and "We are the champions" were talking about being gay. But since it sounds kind of like we are the, as long as it makes you feel good, how about this one? There were churches for a while back in the dark ages that sang "My Sweet Lord," thinking that was a Christian song, not realizing it was about Hare Krishna. Close, kind of the same. All right. Next in your notes. Pastor Warren has preached way too long tonight. Go ahead and say amen. Amen. But I got news for you. You're getting your cup filled tonight. In your notes. By the way, and this is what I like to ask every little person that wants to fight with me. If the music is neutral and doesn't matter, and that's what I always hear, why does it matter so much to you? Why are you fighting? If it's not a big deal, then it's not a big deal. But actually, it is a big deal to people. Now, folks, I'm going to cut this short. Now, I'm going to just point on these here. Recently, I came across some horrific nonsense from a church like ours. 10 years ago, they would have been us. Did you hear me? Independent, fundamental, Bible-believing Baptist church. And they were playing a song. Now, if you look in your notes, point number four is there are at least four broad principles that must govern this. And where are these principles from? They're from our doctrinal statement. So in this church, for leaders, this is what we have to do. They're drawn from the Bible. There's no great, you know, view to them. First of all, music must be God-centered. Next, it must be Bible-based. Thirdly, look at me, it must be distinctively Christian. Do you know what that means? Look at me. If a Muslim can sing your song, see, there are certain songs you might be able to sing certain songs. Amazing Grace, people will sing that not knowing what it means. But there's certain songs you're just not going to sing. By the way, I want you to turn, I don't know what page it is, to the Solid Rock. And Tim, I want you to find a different song. What is that song, "Once for All"? Do we have that in our hymnal? Solid Rock, "Once for All," and I'll find a third one. Tim, you have your song? Okay. Now what we're going to do, look at me everybody, what we're going to do is I'm going to illustrate this from a song Christy has. I'm sorry to share this in church. And what I want you to look at is the four broad principles, and then we're going to close with three songs singing together. Folks, this is what I look at when I look at music and worship. I want to make sure it's God-centered. What does it mean to be God-centered? Look at me. What does it mean? God-centered means this. Hey, look up here. It means this. We don't have dancing girls. Were you out in the audience? Because the audience of worship is God, not you. So the question should be, is God clapping? Not whether you're clapping. That's what you do at entertainment. Oh, now we got a problem. The concept is, and I don't have time to develop these, Bible-based. It frankly, when you read great Christian hymns, they sound like the New Testament. It ought to be distinctly Christian, which means some songs you could just sing in any religion of any kind. And it should be congregation-oriented. And I will say this, and this is the last thing I'm going to say until we listen to the song. This is the hardest because America today is lazy, very entertainment-oriented, and it's just a lot easier. Look at me. If I bring John up here and paid him enough money, and I'm being serious, You guys, most of you would be very happy to let John and a few other people do all the singing. And you would be out there. And that's been going on in independent Baptist circles since at least the 60s, probably into the 50s with the quartet stuff. Because we would prefer to be entertained then. But in our church, I am required to do what the... look at me. We worship God. Nobody can worship God for you. Krusty, Cliffy, turn the light off real quick. They have having unbiblical music for 30 years. And if you go in the South and in many places in the North, they started all that, hear me, youth group stuff 30, 40 years ago where we separated. And then on Saturday nights, they had a sing. Have you ever heard the Gothards? Is it the Gothards? What are those people's names? Gaithers. It's all the same to me. Listen to the Gaithers. Some people are so, look at me, there's not enough brain cells to pick it up. Listen to their music. Some of it is not even Christian, actually quite a bit of it. It's just sentimental stuff. By the way, they are good singers. Hello, they are good singers. They don't necessarily sing Christian music. And some of you wouldn't even know the difference between Gaithers and us. You wouldn't know that the Church of God of... they're part of the Church of God of what? You don't know. They're amillennial. All right. We're going to sing three songs. We're going to see if we can close this tonight. And let's see if... let me say, let's ask some questions. Is this God-centered? Is this distinctly Christian? Is this Bible-based? And can we sing it as a congregation? Three songs. Pastor Koch, come on up. I'm going to have you sing, and I'm going to have you begin with this one here, 442. And which one do you have? And then we'll do that one, and then we'll do we'll close with the last song, Solid Rock. Now, do you understand the principles, yes or no? All right. Let's apply the principles and see if they work. Let's stand. 442.